Hello and welcome to another episode of Inside OSU, Oklahoma State University's signature podcast. I'm Dr. Kenneth Sewell, Vice President for Research here at OSU. You know, our scientists and scholars are conducting cutting-edge research in a wide variety of fields, placing OSU among the nation's top tier of research universities. In today's podcast, you'll sit in on my interview with Dr. Jill Joyce, my recent guest at OSU Research on Tap. Research on Tap is the monthly show I host at Stillwater's Iron Monk Brewery. Dr. Joyce is an assistant professor in public health nutrition and nutritional sciences. We discussed her work in the field of tactical nutrition, where she works with first responders and military personnel to improve their health and safety. Now, you work specifically with law enforcement officers, firefighters, military personnel, et cetera. Now, what are the problems these professionals have in these particular fields that are relevant to a public health nutritionist?
Well, you can imagine the occupational kind of hazards that they come upon. When it's firefighters, I mean, they've got heat, they've got the fire itself, they're wearing heavy gear, oxygen tanks, stress, dehydration. There are a lot of physical hazards. And same goes for law enforcement or military. But we often don't think of the other half of the puzzle that impacts our risk of developing some type of disease, and that's your actual lifestyle behaviors. And I mean, what do we do when we're stressed out? Unfortunately, our lifestyle behaviors tend to suffer.
I don't know what you're saying.
Yep. I'm a sweets addict.
Okay.
Don't judge me. If you see me at Marble Slab, the girl knows my regular.
Okay, so these are stressful jobs for sure, yeah. But you know, there are a lot of jobs that are stressful. What do these professions have in common that make stress have a unique impact?
So it's kind of the type of stresses that they're exposed to. They impact them physically, and they impact them physically more so than the general population. But then unfortunately there's also that emotional impact. I mean, they see, let's go dark slightly, deep. They see death and destruction, unfortunately, of lives or property on a regular basis. So it takes a toll, and it tends to come out in lifestyle.
So I've heard you talk about these groups of professionals as tactical athletes. Mm-hmm. So is it really different than, say, a professional athlete, or is it distinct from that?
They are quite different. And oftentimes I'll do presentations where I'll talk about a general athlete and then I'll talk about how they're different from a tactical athlete when it comes to nutrition or health.
But they're athletes because they have to do this physical performance.
You get
thing.
It.
Yeah.
Yep. They might have to sprint, cover long distances in running, so endurance. They might have to tackle, climb, carry, throw, squat,
I'm getting a little post-traumatic stress from my own athletic background now,
yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah.
But they're tactical athletes, but it's different than regular athletes.
It is different. They're not, one, they don't, depending on the type of tactical athlete they are, they may not have to train quite as often. And they also don't have to perform oftentimes quite as often as like a collegiate athlete or a professional athlete.
So it's kind of an on-demand thing.
Yes, exactly.
They might not be called upon, and then all of a sudden they really are.
Yeah, there's no warm-up for a fire. There's no stretching. There's no, it's just throw the gear on and let's do this.
There's a lot of puns we're going to get into. So no warm-up for a fire. I like that.
Yep. Oh, that was I didn't even catch. Touché.
You did it without.
Way
okay.
to go.
I have a pun built right into my questions for my next one. So. Here's my question. What are you and your team cooking up?
Oh, boy.
Pun very much intended there. What are you and your team cooking up to help with these problems?
Do you want the literal cooking up or the not literal?
Well, let's do both.
So I work in public health, and with public health, we take an approach where we assess a group to see what their problems are. We diagnose the issue or multiple issues. In my case, they're nutrition related. Jay Dawes is my kinesiology counterpart, so he gets the physical training side of things. He sees what their issues are.
Oh, you work in a pair.
Work in a pair.
So a physical training and the nutritional training
side. We got you covered physically.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes. So I diagnose your issues, I create interventions that will tackle those problems, and then I continue to follow up.
So you're diagnosing like the whole group, though, because it's public health, right?
Yes, I do diagnose whole groups. And it's kind of, we'll assess a large group and we'll just see what are the trends for the majority of the group.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what's the intervention? What are you developing?
Well, honestly, a lot of what I'm doing at the moment is on the assessment side of things. There's maybe 4 or 5 people in the country that are doing research with tactical groups in nutrition. Military has a good bit more, but if you talk fire or law enforcement, there aren't very many. And there hasn't been much work done. So we have to identify what's going on, diagnose the problems before we can move on to interventions. But we have noticed some issues and we are moving on a little bit. So right now, one thing we have is a 12-week online wellness program. And it's not overly time intensive, but what we tackle are things that you don't typically think of when you're trying to instill a lifestyle change. We always think that when we fail that it was our fault, you know, we just couldn't stick to it, it was our self-discipline. But to be honest, it's a million other things in your life. I mean, it's the people around you, it's the environment around you, what you have access to, the time you have, the stressors you're exposed to. If you have children or not, I mean, how many people with children live on chicken nuggets and french fries? It's hard to eat healthy with kiddos sometimes. So
you do this, you do the assessment at an individual level, or how do you assess what those problems are?
We do assessments on both levels. We look at an individual. I'll look at, first off, what is kind of their motivation to change, their confidence in changing, their intention to change. That tells me kind of where they're at and what I will tailor my intervention based on how ready are they to change. So that's the first thing I'll look at. I'll do that on an individual level, but we can also do that on a group level. You can kind of walk into a room and feel like the health culture after a while. You can start to tell, like, is this group supportive of health or maybe not so much? So I'll look at that. And then I'll also look at individual habits. You know, how are people eating? What is their dietary quality? And I can also do that with an environment. So like a fire station. Mm. I'll go in and assess the food environment.
I was going to ask, like, how do you gain access? You're not just throwing this stuff over the wall here. How do you gain access to these groups?
For some reason, they let me in the door. although they do typically, I think, probably think of me as the food police coming in.
Food police.
But we, just from connections, OSU's been fantastic. I didn't realize what a hub for fire research OSU is.
Absolutely.
We have a fire council that's got, faculty, researchers, and staff in almost every college and numerous departments. I mean, there's probably 30 departments that are connected. It's awesome. So Jay and I have walked into so many connections off the bat. I have like an 8-page list of connections. Yep.
So you assess what the problems are by asking, I presume these are questionnaires or interviews?
Mm-hmm.
Questionnaires usually. And then you devise an intervention. Is that is it based upon your own background, your own training, or the science in the area? How do you devise this intervention?
A little bit of both. The kind of their stage of readiness, the community's readiness, the problems we find, those often will dictate the details of the intervention, as well as the different theories that I'll use to create it. There are different types of behavior modification theories that have been tested. And we use those as kind of a guide. They have different constructs or like magic ingredients that have to be present in order for change to actually occur. So we'll pick the right theory based on where the group is at. And then we'll spell out the elements, those magic ingredients, based on the assessment that we did.
Okay. All right, so now you're ready to implement.
Mm-hmm.
You've got this 12-week program.
Mm-hmm.
You stick it online and hope they find it. How do you get that back to them? You don't go in individually and train all these individuals.
Not
right?
With the online one. With the online one, we have a decent social media presence. I don't even know what viral means, so it's definitely not that though. But we have a decent social media presence and a lot of networks. So when we recruited, we put it out there on social media, asked people to share, and we also worked through that 8 pages of connections that I've made and asked them to share it. And we had about 115 people from, I'd say, 7 different states do it. mix of law enforcement and fire mostly, which was pretty funny because law enforcement and fire tend to be a little competitive.
A little competitive with each other?
Yep, and there was a competition element to it, so it got pretty funny.
Now, some part of the program when we were talking kind of in preparation for this involved like using someone on the inside. So you're sort of on the outside being loud access. Who on the inside could be can be a partner for what you're trying to do?
So we kind of use an extension model. An extension model is where if anybody's seen like the county extension office, there are educators that are housed in those offices, and they're our outreach element of the land grant university or OSU. And they take, in conjunction with faculty, they'll take the science that we kind of test out and develop, we'll turn it into practical, usable, different programs, and then the educators will implement for the public so the science can reach the people and benefit the people. We do a similar model, except educators embedded in the counties. We use peer fitness educators within the fire departments.
Peer fitness educators?
Yes, or wellness coordinators, they have different names.
So is it like the strength and conditioning coach for a football team? They've got one for the fire department?
However, whether they have formal training or not definitely varies.
Okay. So how do you use them? What do they actually then do with what you've developed?
So one of our grants right now is working with FEMA to actually train those individuals to a little more formally. So they go through 40 hours of training. 8 hours of the first day is nutrition, 8 hours of mental health training, and then 3 days of physical assessment, testing, and developing training programs. But at the end of that, ideally, they kind of have the basics to function using the science, evidence-based practice, but they also know where they shouldn't go and when they should reach out and how to reach out. And we're also a resource for them. So I have, on the nutrition side of things, they've got the basics, and then I have them kind of trained to come back to me for programs, and they're ready to implement now.
So it's kind of like a train the trainer.
It is, very much.
Process.
Yep.
Now, I've heard something about you having a tactical cooking cart.
Yes.
So I need to know what this is. So describe, like, what is it and how do you use it?
It's glorious. It's from Lowe's.
No advertisement here,
no.
Please.
No. It's from a home goods or a home improvement store.
A big box home improvement store.
Because then it looks tactical. It looks like it's from a garage. I had to get some street cred with that. We also have a mobile fitness trailer now, too. So we're just mobile.
So he gets a fitness trailer and you just get a cart.
You know, okay. We'll talk about that later.
Sounds like there's a little bit of competition there, too.
I mean, I can roll my cart into the bigger trailer, but...
Oh, that helps.
You know.
So what's a tactical nutrition cart, a cooking cart?
So I literally did go to the big box store and I bought actual garage cabinets with wheels and the butcher block cooking tops. I have two of them, and I also have 6 plastic bins of like a glorified college kitchen in a box. So we can actually literally roll out and go cook. We're actually gonna do it this spring with ROTC. For 16 weeks, we're gonna teach them a basic nutrition skill, or some type of nutrition education, a cooking skill, and then something food safety related. And they'll actually get to cook and taste test healthy food.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're doing all these things to help. You're assessing on the front end, then you're offering this intervention, working with the health trainers that I'm blanking on the name already.
The peer fitness
personnel. But then this whole, you know, this is research on tap, right? So there's a research component to this side.
There is.
How are you testing it? How do you know when this is all said and done, how will you know that this had an effect?
Well, we kind of use a model that like a clinician would use. Even as a clinician, we do a baseline assessment and then we follow up afterwards. We monitor and kind of evaluate our effectiveness with our interventions, adjust, and kind of it's a continuous cycle. So we choose ideally valid and reliable assessment tools, aka they measure what they're supposed to and they do so consistently. So they're really good assessment tools. I'm usually looking at things like, did their motivation to eat healthy increase, their confidence, their intention, Did their knowledge increase? Did their attitudes improve towards nutrition? If it's a short-term program, that's usually about all I can impact. But if it's a little bit longer term, say like 3 months, like the 12-week online program, we'll actually start to see behavior changes.
So how do you measure like how well someone is eating?
That's a fun one.
Unless you follow them around as individuals. And,
yeah. Well, they have to write down everything they ate. For me, they have to write down everything they ate in the last 24 hours at a minimum.
So you just pick a time frame and say, mm-hmm. in the last 24 hours.
Yep, in the last 24 hours. And I'll be specific. Because with firefighters, 24 hours, if they're on shift, they work 48-hour shifts. So I have to specify with these guys. I'll have them write everything down, and then we plug it into a computer program that we call nutrient analysis. And it will give me their macronutrients or carbs, protein, fat, and then it'll give me all the vitamins and minerals that they consume in a day.
So that sounds like a lot of information.
It is.
Is there ever a point where you boil it down?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So one, we'll take that and we can compare to recommendations or the amounts they're supposed to get. But we can translate it further into something that's a little bit more meaningful. Because if I tell you that you need to eat more magnesium, you're too low. I mean, what foods have magnesium? A multivitamin.
I maybe go to the store and buy milk of magnesium and hope that helped, right?
Kind of. yep. So we translate it. I translate it into dietary quality. So I can take what you eat in a day. I'll take your nutrient analysis and I'll give you a score out of 100. And it works just like a letter grade. And this is where I start becoming more and more like the food police, because I'm starting to grade you.
Uh-oh.
But it's nice because I can actually say, if you're 80 to 100, you're good to go. If you're 50 to 80, you need improvement.
So we don't need to make a B. We just need to make a... We need to make an A or a B, right?
See, you're getting... But then, not just an overall score, I also get subcategories. There's 13 subcategories, like fruit, vegetable, different kinds of those, grains, whole grain or refined, sodium, saturated, all that sort of stuff. So I can see in the subscores, if we need to improve, where do we need to improve?
Yeah.
And it translates into food, which is nice.
It's an interesting area. You said there's not that many people doing it. Mm-hmm. And I have to ask, what led you into this research area? I mean, is it just really fascinating, or is there some backstory? How'd you wind up doing this kind of work?
Definitely a backstory. It's a very niche area. So most people know my husband, who's over there at the one table by the bar, Tom Joyce. We met doing ROTC at the University of Pittsburgh. So I always wanted to serve, wound up marrying it instead. And so he was active duty for 9 years. So for 9 years, our family away from home was all military personnel. So I don't just know them research-wise, I also know them really, really well, so they can't lie to me on surveys.
The
I know what's really happening.
Yeah.
But also, we have law enforcement in our family. Tom's dad was a chief probation officer, his brother is a trooper. My grandpa was a firefighter, my uncle and cousin are firefighters, and we've got tons of military on both sides of our family. My favorite pictures in our house are both my grandparents when they deployed and Tom and I when he deployed, so it's kind of like everything to our family.
So it's kind of in your bones at this point.
Yep, so I'm serving my family.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Joyce. Every month, our OSU Research on Tap events showcases yet another OSU researcher with a great story to share. You can find out about future OSU Research on Tap events and attend them live. Just follow us on Facebook or go to research.okstate.edu. And that's it for this episode. I'm Dr. Kenneth Sewell. Join us next time for another Inside OSU podcast.